Last year, we had left off, we had left some unanswered questions. Someone asked, does it count as a hecker on the table if there's something that's supposed to be on a different part of it? It's supposed to be on the table, but it's supposed to be on the other side of the table, or in the middle of the table, and you put it between your plates. So I found that this is a mafurish prima gadim in the Mishnah Zohar at the very end of Siman Hei Ches, which is talking about a hecker between Basar and Chalav. You know, if I'm eating meat and my wife's eating milk, or someone's eating milk, so the prima gadim says, yes, if something belongs on a different part of the table and it's unnatural, it's unusual for it to be between our plates, and we put it between our plates, then it counts as a hecker. Okay, you have to use your judgment. You know, there are some things which should be anywhere on the table, but let's say you have like a vase of flowers, which of course you only put in the middle of the table, you never put between people's settings. If you put it between your settings, that counts as a hecker, because it's not supposed to be on that part of the table. Okay, I could not find any achronim who dealt with the question of, directly, what if you have something that's supposed to be on the table, it's just you put it upside down or sideways or in a way that's weird. But it seems to me that it would be similar, that if it's really, you know, some things, like some might sometimes be sideways, you know, just kacha. But if it's something which would be really weird, for it to be sideways or upside down, then I think that would also count as a hecker, even if it's in a normal place, since it's a weird direction. Okay. We're in the middle of Sif Gimel, which talked about Lo Yochal Azav Mazava Mipnei Hergel Avera. And we mentioned that there were three pshatim about this. One was Ha'ara Achas, that's the Rambam, and others. Two was Achilas Shiari Ishto, eating her leftovers, which you pointed out were very similar, except I quoted you the Rav Moshe, says there's a subtle difference between them. And third was Shulchan Echad. In terms of Shulchan Echad, the Sidrei Tara in the back here does quote, and I think we sort of rushed through a few things, he does quote an interesting machlokas between the Re'ah and the Rashba in the on the side of the Torah Sabayis, the Re'ah and the Bedek Abayis, and the Rashba responding to the Shemir Sabayis, as to what the reason for the Gzer of Shulchan Echad is. The Pashup Shat, the reason of the Gzer of Shulchan Echad, is because it's intimacy. If you eat together with someone, then that brings you close. That's the Pashup Shat. Of course, that would be behind the Shita of the Rush, who says that it only applied to personal tables, not the big tables. That's what it sounds like from the Ra'ah there. The Rashba says that the reason he seems to assume, in this bit of a chiddush, the reason for the Isra of eating on one shulchan is that it might lead to eating from one plate. And eating from one plate is closeness. Okay, that would be a big chiddush in terms of gzera. That's what the Rashba says there. And it could be that the nafkamina of that would be the question, which I think we left off with, which is, what if other people are eating with you? If other people are eating with you, it's very hard to say it's a romantic kind of closeness. You know, if, whatever, like, a date is not romantic if someone else comes along. But if the Rashba is machmir, the Rashba says, no, you still might end up eating from the same plate. Well, there's a little more complicated, but it could be that this discussion, which is found in the Piskei Tshuva here, that he assumes with Pasha, that with other people, it's much of to eat from the same plate, might be totally on this Chakira. Okay, if he holds that maybe from the same plate, they still might eat from the same plate. If you hold the problem is just that it's intimate, then if you're not intimate, if there are other people there, we pointed out, in terms of the heterum of Shulchan Echad, we pointed out that there are some heterum that we're not Noagin Lahakel like them, and some heterum that we are Noagin Lahakel. The heterum that we do accept are a hecker, right, in between them.
That's the Hefzik that's mentioned by the Ramah and the Mechaber and the Ramah, just, sorry, half a second. The other Heter that we're knowing, but is not really relevant nowadays, is in Regilim Lecho Bikara Achas, right? That's the Ramah.
Quoted from the from the re-quote in the Hagos Hashiri, but nowadays no one's working from the same plate, so it's not so relevant. And the other heter, the main heter we use nowadays is Acherim Ochlin Imahem, that's in the Pesach Tshuva. Nowadays, basically, the minhag is, if you're eating with other people, not everyone's so makel, but that's the mainstream minhag. If you're eating with other people, then it's okay, that's not intimate, and if you're eating just the two of you alone, then you should put something in between your settings to be a hecker. We're not
knowing the kula of our big tables, which is the rush.
Right, that kula we are not knowing. Hey, even in our big tables, we're still machmir. And this kula, which a lot of posts can bring down, but it doesn't seem to be the minhaga olam nowadays, even though a lot of posts can bring it down, is the, I think the Rabbeinu Yerucham, of, let's see, change your seat. You don't both have to, I think, even if one of you changes your seat. Even though some of the Achronim bring that down, it's not in the Shulchan Aruch, but some of the later Achronim bring that down. Doesn't seem to be the meaning nowadays. I haven't seen in most of the handbooks. In the Chassan class, they tell you to switch your seat. Usually the minhag is either eat with other people or if you're by yourself, put something in between your plates and Shalom al Yisrael.
Just clarify, the Sitter Merdafka for Shulchan Aruch, I wouldn't run for Kara
Achas. What about Kara Achas? Good question. What about Kara Achas? So, when it comes to Kara, here's the question. Do we hold from all these three interpretations? Clearly we hold from the Pshat of Shulchan Echad, besides the fact that's the opinion of most Rishonim, that's Mefurash and Mechaber Ramah. Do we hold from leftovers? Right? That is a Machlokas, so do we hold for it? This is Halacha L'maisa. What about eating leftovers? So that's the Ramah at the end of the Sif. Yesh Omer Sha'asu L'lechem Shura Machos L'lechem Sha'asu L'lechem Shura Koshala Kamoshi Yisbayer. The Sfardim do not hold from this. Why? Because the Mechaber says the next Sif Lo Yishtam Yishur Koshashahi. You can't drink her leftover in the cup. The Mechaber knew full well how to say you can't eat leftovers either if he wanted to and decides not to. The Mechaber thinks that there is no Isser of leftover food, only leftover drink. Which makes sense because a leftover drink is sort of more intimate of sharing the same cup. It's more close as opposed to just taking food off a plate. Anyway, so here is Mutter Lesfardim. Again, I'm always hesitant to say Mutter Lesfardim because there are, you know, it's sort of Eurocentric and insensitive to me whenever I say for Sephardim because there are many different kehilos of Sephardim coming from different countries in the old country who each have their own minhagim. So there are always, on every issue, there are always some countries of Sephardim on every issue that hold like the Ramah and some countries that hold like the Mechaber. What I mean is most Sephardim. Most Sephardim hold like the Mechaber. There's no issue to eat leftover food. But for Ashkenazim, it's a Mefurish Ramah. That it's usher to eat her leftover food, just like it's usher to drink her leftover drinks. The Shach is even convinced that that there's no other way to that. The Shach is convinced that the Sfarim have no leg to stand on whatsoever. Shach here says it's not just that Yesh Omrim and the Minhag Ashkenaz says there's no validity to saying you can't drink leftovers, you can't eat leftovers, because the Gemara says Achal V'Shasa. So, whatever she was drinking has to be true of eating. Okay, the Sfardim disagree. The Sfardim assume that eating has to do with the same table, and drinking has to do with leftovers. Anyway, but Lamaisa, Achila Shuri Ishto, Vispra, Ashkenazim accept, and Sfardim don't. How about Kara Achas? Do we have an Isra of the same plate? You might say, who cares? We have the Isra of the same table. What's the Nafgamina? Obviously, if the same table is Usher, the same plate is Usher. But nonetheless, the Taz says here that there's an isser of the same plate, and he says not the same serving plate. that obviously you can take the same serving plate and put on your plates. That's not called eating the same plate. That's the serving plate. We're talking about not putting it on your plate, eating directly from the same plate. It's usser. What's the nafkamina of it being usser? If it's usser, you're in the same table anyway. So, as Yosef pointed out, this is halacha lemaisa, and it's more chamor than shulchan echad. In what way is it more chamor than shulchan echad? It's more chamor than shulchan echad in that there's no heterim. To eat from the same plate, there is no heterim. Meaning a hecker doesn't work to eat on the same plate. Eating with other people doesn't work to eat on the same plate. The same plate is always usser, and there's never room to be mako. Okay, the Petzchei Tshuva brings down from his own svara that the reason you can't eat with other people on the same plate is because you end up eating each other's leftovers, like from the other din. If you look in the Tashbates, it sounds like the reason you can't eat with others on the same plate is just because the same plate is chamer. You can't eat with others. But halachalissa, basically the Tashbates thinks you can't eat with other people on the same plate. We did one. Even though the Pesachet Tshuva thinks we did two. Lemaisa comes out the same. There's no heterim, and the Shevet Alevi says no heter of heker on the same plate. There's no heterim, like even if you would put like something in the middle of the plate, it still wouldn't help. There's never heterim to eat from the same plate. So it's more chamer than shulchan. Mati. Correct, although, meaning it would be obvious misvara that even in that case the plate is at least as bad as the table. The chiddush is just that it's worse.
Two separate plates, would there be a nisr?
If you picnic with two separate plates?
If you're outside a bench or, I don't know, you're not on a shulchan.
That's interesting. What if you're picnicking with two separate plates, but it's not on a shulchan? Is that usr? After all, where did you draw the line? That's a fascinating question. What if it's not on a shulchan? What if you're just picnicking? Picnics are very romantic, right? They're more romantic than tables.
A bench or something.
What?
Like a bench or, in a car or something like that.
Anyway, it would seem to me that any time you're eating in what everyone would consider to be together, then you should need a hecker, even if it's not technically a table. Like, it's silly to me to say at the dining table you need a hecker, but you go on a picnic and you don't, because everyone knows picnics are more romantic than dining tables.
No, like driving a car is like...
Right, driving a car, you'd say, that's not a shulchan. It's not someplace you sit to eat. I haven't seen this in the postgame, but I agree with both intuitions, or maybe one was my own, that I think, if you're momish, sitting someplace to eat, that, like a picnic, then you should need a hecker. If, let's say, you're putting your food on the same dashboard of the car, I would think you would not need a hecker, because that's not a way of eating together. What? Well, it's not the same table. It's two different trays.
Right.
But on the same tray of a plane, I would be machmer. I'd be machmer on the same tray. Not that who eats on the same tray of a plane. But you could.
You have achirim,
eh? What?
You have achirim,
eh? You do have achirim. Because the achirim are not on that table. The achirim only work on the same table. The achirim are, if I go to a restaurant with my wife, it doesn't help. There's 100 achirim. They're not on my table. The achirim only work on the same table. Achirim ofling mahim. Al shulchan zeh. Yeah. Now, even though you're right, obviously the plane is not such a romantic setting as opposed to a restaurant. I mean, if I go to a restaurant with someone, then if I go to a restaurant with my wife, even those 100 other people, if we have our own table, that's romantic. I think. Otherwise, why do people spend so much money in restaurants? Right? My wife puts better food in the restaurants. You go to the restaurant to be romantic. So it's happening on the same table. On a different table doesn't help.
Isn't someone right about the distinction? There is some point where it becomes a serving bowl for everyone that everyone's sharing from?
Yeah, so in terms of the Kara Achas, that the Taz says a serving bowl is not a problem. But how do you know what's a serving bowl, what's not? So the answer is going to be, it depends if you take it and put it on your plate or not. Like, even if it's a general bowl, you still can't eat Bakara Achas if you're eating straight from the bowl.
You know, let's say, modern day, where
pretzels at a kiddush.
There are times where you take something from a serving thing and don't bite it up a sec. But there's finger food and things like that.
Right, but that could be problematic. I think that is, let's say a bowl of pretzels at the kiddush.
Yeah.
I think that's a problem. If I stand with my wife by the bowl of pretzels at the Kiddush, first of all, I don't know what that, it's not Kovach Shabbos to eat pretzels at the Kiddush. That's for kids. You mean the bowl of herring at the Kiddush.
Yeah.
You know, something that properly takes into account the significance of Shabbos and the weight and depth of our Mesorah. So I'm standing at the pretzel bowl with my wife, and I'm taking pretzels, and she's taking pretzels. I think that's also, that's mamish karachas. If I take pretzels and put them on my plate, sometimes they have your own plate at the Kiddush. That's one thing. And what if I want to eat pretzels with my wife? Then I should get a plate and put pretzels on a plate and eat them. We don't need two plates. She can eat from the bowl and I can eat from the plate. That's okay. Because then we're not eating from karachas. Or what if they don't plate to the Kiddush? I don't fill a cup with pretzels at the Kiddush. But yeah, that's karachas. Even though it's a serving bowl, I don't know what the definition of serving bowl. In the Taz, the definition of serving bowl is if you put it on a different plate, not if it's a big general bowl. A big general bowl is still an Isser Karachas. So even at the Kiddush, even if there's 100 people at the Kiddush, I can't stand with my wife and eat pretzels.
Isn't everyone's general bowl?
What? Even though it's everyone's general bowl, I still can't. That's Karachas with Acherim, which we're Machmir. Karachas is Usser even, meaning Usser even to share with others, and even with a hecker, even though I've never heard of anyone who actually tries to make a hecker in a kara achas, but the Shevet Alevi does say on the side here, and sure, a hecker doesn't work for kara achas. Not that I would really have thought to make, but you never know. Put something in the old car. Now, a serving bowl is mutter, but a serving bowl is only mutter if you take it and put it on another plate. Otherwise, even the bowl of pretzel of the Kiddush is a problem. Even the bowl of pretzel of the Kiddush is a problem. I don't know if when I was young, I used to watch movies, and in movies, I know what happened in the movies. There's a big bowl of pretzels, the Kiddush, and there was a guy, and there was a girl, and there was a lot of metach going on there in the movies, and all of a sudden, they're both eating from the same pretzels from the same bowl of the Kiddush, and they touch, and all of a sudden, sparks, and there's stars, and the music starts playing, and you know how these things work.
All those classic movie Kiddush scenes.
Yeah, the, whatever it was, or the you know, the culturally appropriate parallel. Anyway, so I think that is a big problem. What you could do is just put the pretzels on a different plate. What about the hors d'oeuvres at the wedding? So the difference is, what Karachas, remember what Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe says it's not called Karachas if, unless you are at the same time. If one finishes and the other starts, that's not Karachas. You have to ask whether or not she right, but it's not Karachas. So therefore, in hors d'oeuvres, if the husbands take one of the hors d'oeuvres, then he's done. He's finished with the hors d'oeuvres. Then the wife can take an hors d'oeuvre, because that's not considered two eating at the same time. The husband's finished before the wife starts. Because you don't, like, keep taking hors d'oeuvres. I mean, some people do, but it's not really so polite. You take one. However, the pretzel bowl, so the pretzel bowl also, if there's a Kiddush and I go eat pretzels and I'm done eating pretzels, my wife can eat pretzels. Even if my wife goes and takes pretzels and she's done, I can take pretzels. That's not considered leftovers, because they were never her pretzels. She was never having, she would eat all the pretzels. But, so that's fine, you can stop and then start, right? But, what are the only cases that are mutter? Only cases that are mutter are, number one, a serving bowl if you transfer to a personal plate or other utensil, but not a serving bowl if you just eat with your hands from the serving bowl. That does not help. Or two, if it's not simultaneous, then that's not called karachas, meaning one finishes before the other begins. So that's the only case where it's much or eat from the same bowl. Even someone else eating in between them, if they're both in the middle of eating, that's called eating with a cherem. I don't think that helps. That's what the Pesach Teshuva says. He says it doesn't help because it's going to end up forgetting to have someone eat in between them. But from the Sefer Tashbase, it sounds like it doesn't help fundamentally. But either way, that doesn't help. Isn't that what he says? He says, like, it's not going to help you. You're going to end up messing up.
Don't want to say about your drinking, then?
What?
Don't want to say about drinking?
We only say it by when it's not simultaneous, when one finishes before the other starts. Then one is finished before the other starts. The story's over. Right? Remember, this is what Rav Moshe says. The difference between Karachas and Sharayim is that karachas means when you're both still in the middle of eating at the same time, and shiraya means when one finished and the other started. So, if...
So does heker work for shiraya?
If the... Now, let me just go back here. Let's go back to this case. Not simultaneous, so one finished before the other starts. Let's just say, if the wife finishes, then the husband starts, that is always mutter, right? No, I meant the other way around. If the husband finishes and then the wife starts, that's mutter, because the wife is allowed to eat the husband's leftovers. But what if the wife finishes and then the husband starts? Then the wife finishes that. If they're both in the middle, that's karachas. That's usher in all circumstances, unless they're putting it on separate plates. What if they're not simultaneous? So if the husband goes first, the wife goes second, it's great. If the wife goes first and the husband goes second, then for Sfardim, mutter, right? Because Sfardim don't have a problem with leftovers. For Ashkenazim, then it depends. What does it depend on? If it is for her piece, then it's usher. If it is not her piece, then mutter. Meaning, what's called her leftovers? A bowl of pretzels at the kiddush that she ate a pretzel from is not her leftovers. Her leftovers is only if it was a portion for her, right? Or it's only called her leftovers if it was a portion for her and she ate part of it and left part of it. If it was a big bowl with enough for many, many people, that's not called leftovers. If it was different pieces and she ate one piece and left the other piece, that's not called leftovers. It has to be a personal piece or serving that is hers. Like, when I say piece, what I mean is, like, if it's slices of bread, then only if she left over part of the slice of bread. If it's, like, a salad, then only if, like, there's a serving of salad and she ate part of it and left part of it, that's her leftovers. You know, so, like, with rice, each piece is not significant. Each, like, pile on the plate is significant. With bigger things, each piece is significant because each piece is its own serving. With cookies, each cookie is its own cookie. As opposed to, with rice, whatever you put on the plate at once is considered one piece. So therefore, it's mutter for the wife to eat after the husband. It's mutter for the husband to eat after the wife if it's not from the same serving that she left over. But if it's in the same serving she left over, then it's usher to eat even afterwards.
What about a suffig if she took from this bowl, or she's coming back and taking from this bowl? Is that a suffig? Like, you have to ask the waitress, oh, did my wife take from your hors d'oeuvre thing?
No, if you don't know about, what you don't know won't hurt you. That comes out of Sivdala. I think that would be applicable here also.
This is to clarify that the heter of Adamach or Mafsik is when it has a din of Shirayim, then someone else comes in.
Right, the heter of Adamach or Mafsik is for Shirayim.
But if they're both in the middle of their own eating, it doesn't help with someone in between.
Right, now that's not exactly what the Pesukei Tshuva says, although practically that's what the Pesukei Tshuva says, and that's also what it sounds like from the Tashbetz, which we don't have in front of us.
But look up.
Taz where? Yeah, for sure. Pashut. Okay. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yes. Yosef.
Heker for Shirayim.
No, that doesn't help. Although we'll see there are other things to help for Shirayim.
Because you say another person present would help.
No. For Shirayim? Who said that?
That's the Ramah. What? In Dalet. By Moshe
that's not another person present. That's another person eating in between.
Specifically in between. Okay, fine.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, these are the halachas. I think we've gotten the halachas of Shulchan Echad and Karaachas down pretty well. The halachas of eating leftovers, we've mentioned, but since, like, the main part of leftovers is Zifdalid, we haven't gotten through all the details yet. So if you have more questions about leftovers, why don't we just wait a second for Zifdalid. Says Zifdalid, Lo yishta mishiyurei kosha shasahi. The husband can't drink from his wife's
from his wife's leftovers, because again, in that story of Eliyahu, she says he ate with me and drank with me, and that sounds like an isser, and they understand drinking with me means drinking her leftovers. And that's what the Shach says, well, then eating with me means eating her leftovers. So Pasha is the same for eating and drinking. Okay, as far as Minig is not that way. In Lo, and Rama, he can't drink her leftovers. So what happens when it comes to drinking leftovers or eating leftovers? Lefi Ashkenazim. Drinking her leftovers or eating for Ashkenazim. So the answer is that if you say it, her drinking his, that's mutter. If you say it's him drinking hers, that's aser. Right? That is not, I mean, it doesn't say so quite so many words in the Mechaber, but it's fairly clear that's what the Mechaber meant, and the Ramah makes it explicit just to make sure that there's no ambiguity. Why is this? So there's many places we'll see in Hilchas Nida where we're not politically correct. We say there are differences between men and women. And one of them is that a man can be more easily led into a certain inappropriate place than a woman can. That's just part of biology. And therefore, there are some cases, which is the same for men and women, some cases which is just more of a, perhaps slightly more distant chash, that he will start thinking about her and that can lead to inappropriate types of thoughts. Which are only for the man, not for the woman. So if he drinks his wife's leftovers, he drinks from her cup, then he'll feel a certain type of physical connection, which might lead to inappropriate directions. But we're not afraid that it will lead to inappropriate directions for her. So it's only usher for him to drink her leftovers. And the diuk is, it says, shasa imi, he drank with me, meaning he drank after me. Never says, I drank after him. Her drinking after him is fine. It's only him drinking after her that is usher. That's a diuk, but it's a diuk that's accepted by all the Rishonim. So, says the Ramah, however, there are many exceptions. Im lo shemafse got amacher ben yehem. If someone else eats in between them, then it is okay. What are the cases of a terim? Number one, someone else drank or ate for Ashkenazim's, drank in between. So if she drinks and then someone else drinks, then it's not connected to her anymore, and it is okay. Osha hurek mikos del kos acher. Afilu hosha del kos arishon. So two is poured to a different cup. Right, this is, meaning, unless you're like on a teal or something without cups, this is the easiest thing. What if the husband, Taka, wants to drink his wife's leftovers? Not because he wants to drink her leftovers, just that it's something he wanted to drink. Just pour it into a different cup, it's okay, then you're not connected to her anymore. Right? And the same would apply to plates, even though Moshe questioned this a little, but it's Makobel, the same would apply to food for Ashkenazim. What if you want to eat your wife's leftovers? You know, you feel bad throwing it out. It's not worth saving, so you want to eat your wife's leftovers. So you could just put it onto your plate, and then it would be okay.
Is it
Moshe? No, Moshe questioned this. He says maybe for food this wouldn't work only for drink, but the Minhag Olam is not like that at all. All the other poskim say it works for food also. Yes?
From the Gemara, because the Gemara still sounds like, I mean, the whole idea that even Shasa Imi was already an issue is like, it's hard to see why you have to say that was already an issue. But if even if you want to say it, as all the Rishonim do say it's an issue. So how did that become a Philip? Like, it's the same.
Just Svara.
Svara?
Yeah. V'im Shasa v'hu ein yodei avro tzolish v'kosh shalom ein etzrich l'hagid lo shalom yishda. So number three, hear what you don't know won't hurt you, because the whole problem is in letting you know. Right? The whole problem is what you're thinking. If you don't know, that won't hurt you. So, if he doesn't know she drank from it, then it's no problem. It continues to Ramah. Behimu teres lishtos mikos shasa hui. She can drink his leftovers that we already have in the word. Mishasa mikos v'holcha lo yishom v'shamot lishtos hamosar d'mechshukar holcha ein kan diba. So, number four, if she is not present, obviously, she has to be present once to start drinking. But if she leaves, then he can drink her leftovers, because if she's not here, then he's not going to have the problem of thinking about her in a way that could become inappropriate. So it is okay. And not only that, the Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Pesach Tshuva, quote from the Sefer Yad Eliyahu, let's say he started drinking it behetra and then she came back. He can keep drinking it, because once he started drinking it, it's already disconnected from her. The Pesach Tshuva and Rabbi Akiva Eger, quoting the Sefer Yad Eliyahu. One heter which does not help, which the Shach points out in Sukkot and Tess, is if you add more drink to the cup, that doesn't help. Let's say she drank half a cup. So you like refill the cup and then drink the whole cup, that doesn't help, because you're still drinking her leftovers. So it's not a heter to add more drink to the cup. Okay, this, yes, Yoni.
Two questions. First, is the third and fourth heter apply to food also?
Yes.
And second is, what about like air drinking? As opposed to pouring into a different cup, maybe like the whole lava is like it's kind of a cure.
What about air drinking? It's a great question. Not sure. When I grew up, they didn't have many of air drinking yet. I know people invented it nowadays, not for helpless need, but because they're German. It's a great question.
We had to see the Rosh when we mocked it, right? If eating at the same table is going to leave you eating one plate, then
right.
Air drinking is going to leave you a regular
right. Drink. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not running to be Mako. Okay, this issue doesn't usually come up so much. It's usually not such a deal. So whatever, if the husband wants to drink, first of all, usually we don't drink people's leftovers. If we do, you just put it into your cup. You know, sometimes husbands and wives go someplace, you know, with water bottles and tiol and walking someplace, etc. So when the wife's in Nida, they should bring separate water bottles, and then they avoid all chashos. And what happens if for some reason, like, the wife drank from a water bottle, and the husband's water bottle spilled, and he wants something, he can just pour it into his water bottle, and shalom Yisrael. What if they only have one water bottle? Then it's a problem. The husband could drink first, and the wife second. But then, if an hour later they want to drink the rest of it, now they're stuck. He can't drink anymore. So they should always drink two water bottles and solve the problem. And what if? Or I guess they're really stuck. You know, she can go away, and then he can drink her water bottle. But it's easier to have two.
What's considered going away or not being present? Like
I think not being visible, not being in eyesight. Yeah.
If you say that like not being present just is not going to lead to an action, then as soon as she comes back, it would presumably still be there.
Yeah, but it could be that he doesn't think of it as her leftovers anymore once she comes back, because by now it's his leftovers.
Okay, I guess I'm wondering how Nikila or Pesach Tshuva and Akiva Eger know that meaning they're saying that when she's not there, there's no Kippur, right? Is that
right. It's a good question.
Maybe there's Kippur, and she's not going to lead to anything. She's not there.
Ah, but then that's not then that wouldn't explain the Yad Eliyahu, right? So I think better say there's none.
No, I'm just saying. Okay.
All right. No. Okay. Hey. Yeah.
Is out of eyesight. Like, is Bennett considered out of my eyesight, or because I could turn around and see him, he's not out of my eyesight?
I think he's in your eyesight.
Okay. Yeah. And you remind me.
And based off transparent cups, you could do it even if the person's still eating from it. Like, I could just pour out like half of her cup and then give her the rest of the cup back.
Yeah. Once you transfer to a new plate or cup, it's not shirayim, it's not karachas, obviously. It's a different cup, and there's no problem at all. There's never a problem if you put in a different plate or cup.
And if it's hers prior, like, let's say, like, she has a water bottle. Kept under the stroller. So then, like, it, that was pre-Nida, now afterwards. So it's, like, not really at all connected, but she's there with her, you're not allowed to drink from it. It was pre-Nida.
If she drank from it, then you're not allowed to drink the rest of it.
Like, this can extend for however long.
Yes, even if she drank from it before she was Anita, then you still can't drink from it when she is Anita. Because it's not that the water is Tommy.
Right.
It's just that, yeah. Although, if it's under the stroller, you won't necessarily know if she drank from it.
It's her water bottle.
So if they both leave the room and they both come back, he can't take the drink anymore? He still can't take the drink?
Right. Huh. Right. Right. If they both leave the room and both come back, then he can't drink. She's there. Correct. Okay. So if, hey, He can't sit on her bed, meaning bed that's specific for her, not a bed she ever slept on once in her whole life, but her bed. There's a lot of diyun in what's called her bed, what isn't called her bed. It's really common sense. Everyone knows what someone's bed and what isn't. Where does this come from? This is not found in the Gemara. This, if you remember, is that strange Rav Haigon, right? There's this really strange Rav Haigon who says, even though the basula, after breaking the basula, becomes tmeya, she has no tumas mishkav. And the Ravid said, what are you talking about? Like, there's no tumas mitar as far as I have, I'm going to say to Ravin. He says, no, it must mean, and he's mechadesh, that it's normally usher for a husband to sit on his wife's bed, which is yanida, because of her hurim, of hergil davar, because obviously a bed makes you think of what people do in a bed. And therefore, but they wouldn't make that gzera by dam basulim, since it's only drabanan. And then the Rashba came, even though that's a big chiddush, it's from the strange, inexplicable Rav Haigon, you derive this halacha, but the Rashba came later and said that, well, it actually makes sense, because after all, she's not allowed to make his bed, because it'll lead to inappropriate thoughts that might lead to inappropriate actions. So therefore, taket makes sense, even though if the mucker is only the stranger of Haigon, if you can't make the bed, it makes sense. You also can't lie in the bed. If she can't make his bed, then how can he like lie in her bed? Isn't he obviously going to be thinking of inyane tashmish? Okay, so lemaisa, even though the mucker is peculiar, we say it's a good svara and we assert. The big question is, yeah. Fair enough, when she makes a bed because it's some sort of chiba. Here, there's not doing a mice of chiba. It could be that the Rashba did not understand making the bed was because of chiba. Maybe the Rashba understood making the bed was because it reminds you of Inyanei Tashmish.
So then it could be, even if she'd make all, it could be he would have been probably between the different types of bedding.
It could be. I mean, you have to check out. Yeah, you know, I'm reluctant to say because you could actually find out the answer. But then we'd have to figure it out. It's a good ha'ara. Lemaisa, here we have a big problem. It goes back to, you know, what's really the gersa. Is it lo yeshev or lo yishan? I mean, the machaber is very clear. Is it only us to sleep in her bed? Because we understand sleeping in a bed, really, especially in those days, they didn't even have pajamas, as they point out, so you slept without clothing. So sleeping in her bed obviously makes you think of an yonei tashmish, or is even sitting on a bed. When I sit on a bed, man, it doesn't make me think of an yonei tashmish. It's just like a couch. So this is a big machlokas. The mechaber obviously says it's usher to sit on a bed, and the Taz says the same thing, that afilu yeshiva bi'alma below shechiva, and however the Bach and the Shach say this is a mistake. It's really, you know, Yeshev and Yishan are only one letter off. Yud Shin, just what's the next letter? He says it's all a mistake. It really is the only Yeshev sleeping. There's no Yeshev sitting. So here we have Machlokas. What about him sleeping on her bed? That is for sure Usser. That is for sure Usser. What about him sitting on her bed? So that is a machlokes. The Mechaber and the Taz say Usser, and the Bach and the Shach say Mutter. Okay, I think the more common Minhag HaOlam, I think the more common Minhag HaOlam, this is Larry Willie Poskins, is to be Machmir here. It's an easy enough thing to be Machmir. In general, I'm a sort of very willing is that, and these are chakos, when it's very easy to be machmer, it's always good to have extra reminders, and extra, to be machmer, and the husband shouldn't even sit on his wife's bed, when she is in nida. Are there any limits to this? So the Pesach Tshuva says, we say that afilu shelo b'faneha, even if she's not there, because he's still going to think of her in a way of inyanei tashmish. What if she's not even nearby? Like, there's no possibility of tashmish. The Pesach Tshuva's test says that he thinks it's pashut, that if she's out of town, that's mutter, because, you know, how could it lead to anything? Like, she's not there. He'll still think of this, and he'll go get her, and he'll convince her to do something inappropriate. But if she's out of town, then what's it possibly going to lead to? Lemaisa, the Marsham in the Das Torah, which is the Perush on the Shulchan Aruch, Marsham says, well, it depends how long she's out of town. If she's only out of town for a couple hours, then it'll still leave something bad. But if she's out of town for a few days, then he's not going to remember to be in this mood, and, you know, when she comes home 2 days later from out of town, that's going to wear off. So Lemaisa, the post can assume, like the Pesachei Tshuva, as modified by the Marsham, that if she's out of town for a while, then you can be makel, because it can't lead to anything. Okay, there are, you know, maybe you could say that, I mean, it's hard to imagine what the problem would be, you know, unless you want to say it's a little plug, or you want to say maybe the problems here with Hurim will lead to Zera Matala or something, but the simple shot is Vesio says, no, the problems here with Hurim will lead to Hergel Dover. Problems that'll lead to, like, in general, we assume that the Harchakos and Nida are all up to Nida. And therefore, if she's out of town, then, you know, most of the Harchakos, there's nothing to talk about if she's out of town. Like, situation can't come up. Can't ask, can you pass her something if she's out of town? Can you touch her if she's out of town? Can you eat from the same plate as her or at the same table if she's out of town? Doesn't come up. The only time it comes up is, can you sleep on her bed if she's out of town? And the answer is, yeah, you can be make all if she's out of town for a while. You can be Mako.
Of course, in the future, when you can transport things over, like, electronically, like Star Trek questions.
Right, so there will be many, many issues when it comes to Star Trek questions. This will be the least of our halachic quandaries.
Like, if she's out of town, but she can still beam you up her leftovers, could you eat that?
Right, so we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
For now, it's us.
But yeah, you know, all right. I can make a lot of scientific predictions about the future, but I think a lot of things will probably change before that does. Yes.
So, this is somehow more whatever intimate than, I guess, drinking from the same cup.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you understand why. A cup of Coke is a cup of Coke, but it doesn't, you know, the link between a cup of Coke and Tash B'Shamita is somewhat indirect. You know, that is a makom that's intimately associated with Tash B'Shamita. So you understand why we're machbir. How about him on her bed? How about her on his bed? Here it only says he can't sit on her bed. And why does that make sense? So he said all the things of her hurim and his sinas das, we distrust the man more than we distrust the woman. Okay, you read the media nowadays. You see how sometimes you have to be choshed men more than women of God, that something could lead them in inappropriate directions somehow. How about her sleeping on his bed? So that's no problem. She can sleep on his bed all she wants because we're not afraid her will lead her to inappropriate things. However, says the Taz, but she can't sleep on his bed when she's there. She can't sleep on his bed when she's there. The Taz says she can sit on his bed. Sitting, he's makel, but she can't sleep on his bed. And the Torah HaShlomim here in Sukkot Zion totally disagrees. So here we have, let's say, her sitting. That's for sure mutter. No one asks her sitting in the bed. What about her sleeping on his bed? So this is machlokes, says the Taz. It is aser, says the Torah HaShlomim on the bottom of the page. It is mutter. He says you can't invent new sure we never had, but the Taz says that it is aser. It's fairly clear in the Taz that he's talking about causing him to have her hurim, not causing her to have her hurim. We're not worried about her.
This is when he's there.
This is aser bifanov. It's because it'll lead to his or her. Both ways are because of his or her. Just if he goes near her bed, he'll have her Hurim. If she sits on his bed, he won't have her Hurim. But if she lies in his bed when he's watching, she'll have her Hurim, and therefore she shouldn't lie in his bed when he's there. But when he's not there, then she can sleep in. Then she can sleep in his bed. That is no problem. You know, so like whatever. If he goes out of town, if he goes out of town and she's afraid to stay by herself, so she invites her sister over, then she should sleep in her husband's bed. Her sister should sleep in her bed. It's not sneeze for her sister to sleep in her husband's bed. And as long as he's not there, she can sleep in his bed. It's no problem. Yes?
Just leave it to Ike. Your words, is lying different than sleeping?
No. Lying and sleeping are the same.
So
just sitting is much better. Okay. So much for beds. Now the Ramah adds something, which also I don't think is the minimum one this far.
How do we pass it on that one, though?
In what one?
The Taz versus Jarzah.
Oh, sorry. The Minig is like the Taz. I apologize. To be machmer on this. Thank you. Adds the Ramah, and I don't think the Sfardim are knowing this. You're not allowed to sit on the same bench if it might wobble or move, and it's not attached well to the wall when the wife is sitting on it. I mean, the husband and wife can't sit on the same bench if it moves. And okay, Yesh Matirin, say for a good if someone is in between them. Okay, this is the Isser of Safsol Ha Mith Nad Nedet, that this is considered too close if they feel each other getting up and sitting down, and it's closeness to sit on a bench together, and therefore it is usser. If it's a strong park bench, which is nailed to the ground, very strong, and they don't feel each other, then we say that's mutter. But if it is like a regular bench, or certainly like something really romantic, like a swing or something, then even if they're not touching, then it is usser. What about modern day couches? So it probably depends. Some modern day couches are very strong and have separate cushions. When you sit in one end, you don't feel it in the other end. You can do an experiment when she's not an ego. And then it would be mutter. But a lot of couches would be a problem. So then they couldn't sit on the couch together. Sitting on the couch together is something that is brings people close. So you can't sit on the same couch or bench, etc., unless it is very fixed. However, if someone else is in between them, you can. And the Sefer Agudo also says, if you look it up inside, or it's even quoted in the Beis Yosef in the Darkei Moshe, the Sefer Agudo actually says that even if you put a chifetz in between them, it's mutter. And therefore, really, it would be mutter even if they put a knapsack in between them or something. That would also be mutter because that would show that it's mafsik, the closeness, just like at the table. And it, creates a certain distance.
What about a seesaw?
What about a seesaw? That's a great question. Because a seesaw is not classic. Derech ohavim to sit on a seesaw.
If you're married to go on a seesaw.
It
definitely moves.
Usually, people old enough to get married don't go on seesaw so much.
I really like them.
But okay, great. Anyway, yeah, I would be mafter. It seems to me to be flirtatious behavior.
I mean, is it about like Derech Wallen just said? Isn't it just because you feel them? Like,
yeah, so it's a little funny because if you look in the Makoros, they talk about Derech Wallen. The Trumas Edeshin talks about, which you're about to go, talks about Derech Ohavim. Now, why should the Derech Ohavim make a difference if it's Misnadneid or if it's Kavua Bakotel in terms of the Derech Ohavim? So the Pashtus is that... the Pashtus is, well, like in some indirect sense.
Yeah.
The Pashtus is, we'll see in a moment, that it's probably only us or if it's a case where you feel each other getting up and sitting down, which is some degree of indirect physical contact, and Derech Ohavim. But that's the Pashup shot. Let me get to that in a second. Let me just read you one, the rest of the Ramah, then I'll take questions. V'chein lo yelech meishto b'angola achas, o b'sfina achas, I'm holy rach derech teal, on the goddess of radiation. You shouldn't go in a wagon or boat if you're just going for a offer a pleasure trip like going through the beautiful scenery. You're going for a reason. Then it's mutter even if you're the only two people there, as long as you're careful not to touch. As long as you're careful not to touch. Okay, here the Badei HaShulchan brings down two deos. He wants to say, are we trying to be more machmer or mekel here? Are we saying that if you're going for business, it's mutter even if it's misnagneid? Or is he saying if you're going for pleasure, it's usher even if it's not misnagneid? But the Pasha, as we all know, Rumbot is misnagneid, and Agolos are generally also misnagneid. And if you look at the Jewish tradition, it's very clear in most Achronim, this means the Kula. Even if it's a safsal misnagneid, it's mutter if you're just using it for transportation and not for entertainment. You're not just sitting around or having a nice, like, romantic ride. Rather, you just need to get from point A to point B, it's mutter. So, some people want to say, like Chesky, the whole issue here of safsal misnagneid is all indirect physical contact. It's all about the physical contact. I know it's indirect, but it's still physical contact. So why is it mutter for transportation? For tzorech, makom tzorech, lo gazri, after all, you have to get from place to place. Right? You're not going to take two agolos and two spinos. You're not going to take two cabs. That's too expensive. Right? But so that's what Chesky wanted to say. But if you look at what Shuvah Zadeshen, the way he says it is, no, because sitting on a bench is derech avim. That's a way to that's a way to come close. If I want to be close to someone, I sit on a couch with them. I sit on a bench with them. I'm going to swing or seesaw with them. But just transportation, everyone gets onto the Eged bus. That has nothing to do with the relationship with each other. It's just convenient to get from point A to point B together instead of separately, because it's a lot more efficient. So, even though I hear Chesky's taina, and there's some achronim who make it sound that way, I think the pashup shot is that it's only also if it's misnagneid, and it's not necessary transportation. And why? Probably because it's only also when you have both physical contact and derech lov. That's what I'm claiming from the Truma Sedeshen. You can tie it differently if you want.
There's no esser in going for just a pleasure trip. There's no.
So that's a big machlokes. Is there an esser going for a pleasure trip if it's not safsal hamisnadneid? Right? If it's not safsal hamisnadneid, is it also to go for a pleasure trip or
like in
not?
A car.
What?
Like in a car.
Like in a car. Now, cars are tricky. Ramosh says cars are not misnadneid. It's actually tricky. It might depend. If you have these old-fashioned cars where it's all one long seat, then I think you do feel the other person's getting up and down. In modern cars, they have bucket seats in front, and even the back nowadays, it depends which cars. Yeah, in the back seat of a car, you don't feel the other guy getting into the seat.
Unless you're like directly behind them in the seat. Like,
no, I'm sitting in the back seat. You sit next to me in the back seat. No? But that's what Moshe says. He says cars are very strong. Cars are very strong.
But even so, if there's other people in the car, is that considered between you or stuff? But like, meaning, let's say you're sitting on the left and right side, there's an open seat in the middle.
No, okay, so let us, Chesky, do me a favor here. The other people don't make a difference if they're not
in a stop, so it's not if they're not between you.
Now, the problem with cars, of course, is that cars are more tricky because if you're actually using every seat of the car, it's very hard not to touch. Right? Like, cars are not made for to spare. So, if there's a five-seater car and you and your wife are in the back with space in between you, but what if there's a five-seater car and there's three people in the back? Let's just pause up for 1 second. What do you say here? We say, if you have a transportation plus misnagneid, we say that is mutter. Even though it's misnagneid, it's mutter for transportation, whether you want to say the isser is the nidnun and then they were makel for tzorech, or whether you want to say the isser is only nidnun plus derech ofim, which is what it sounds like from the Truma Sedeshen. What if you have pleasure trip plus misnagneid, then pasha aser. What if you have pleasure trip plus Eino Misnadei? Well, it's a pleasure trip, but it's not Misnadei. Let's say you're in a car, and the car has a strong seat, or you're in bucket seats in the car, and you're just seeing the Ganitz of Pardesim, and it is not Misnadei. Did the Ramah mean to Aser? Holech Derech Teol only Misnadei, or even if not Misnadei? This is a big machlokas achronim. This is a big machlokas. But the pashup shot in the Ramah is that he only meant to aser in a misnadnei. So really, mutter medina, because pashup shot is this is only in the context of safsal misnadnei, and you can't add more yisurim that are already there. However, why do I say mutter medina? Because the proper thing is just to use common sense. You know, there's more romantic pleasure trips. There's less romantic pleasure trips. You know, there's just stam, you know, you want to see a nice Gino Pardes. And then there's like a real romantic trip. So a real romantic trip is really Kedushvi Machmir, even if you're in bucket seats and there's no Nidnut. If it's just stam, a nice drive, then I think you can make also much of Medina. But should be Machmir if it is inappropriate. In general, like people go on a whole romantic vacation and just never sit on the same, you know, seat that's misnadnei. And that would not be appropriate when the wife is a nida. Okay, but you have to, you have to take into account the circumstances.
What if you're on a pleasure trip and like the what if they, like, I don't mean like you're on like a boat, but I'm saying that like you go away on vacation for 2 weeks.
So you have to. Well, you shouldn't sit on a soft slum, it's not made. And you should put a hecker in your romantic dinners, etc. Do you have to cancel the vacation? No, you have to use your common sense. Meaning, if you're you don't have to ruin the whole vacation that you spent a lot of money on. But especially you know,
the whole goal of the vacation is to like have time.
I understand, but look, lemaisa, when push comes to shove, we pass in Medina, the iser of the iser of teal is only within the context of safsal misnadnei. We really pass in the iser of teal is only with safsal misnadnei. Beyond that is using common sense. So you have to think about the circumstances. You spent a lot of money, and it's a very nice place, and even though you're going to lose the romantic aspect, but it's still a nice vacation. You know, or sometimes, whatever, like, sometimes people need to take a vacation, and they can get away a certain time, and it's not necessarily romantic, but they just need to relax a little. So as I said, you have to use your judgment. Right, Medina, it's only within Safsalim, it's not Nate. But you have to use your judgment and take into account the circumstances and use common sense. Obviously, it's a big difference whether you plan it. You know, if I stop at one day trip that's very romantic, so I reschedule it. You know, if I plane tickets, you know, if I, you know, or if this is the only vacation that you get from work, etc., and you just need to relax and get away a little, then okay, you have to use your judgment.
Ramosha
says the car is not misnadnei. Cars are very big.
Let's say the wagon is misnadnei. Does it matter whether you, like, say you're going to a park, right? But you mean the pleasure trip is not...
That's the interesting question. What if you're transporting yourself to a place which is pleasurable? Right?
Yeah,
so that counts as a pleasure trip or not. You're not getting pleasure from the trip. You're just getting to Great Adventure. You need to go to Great Adventure. You're not going on the rides together in Great Adventure in the same, like, you know, little, you know, next to each other, the same thing, which would end up touching anyway in the roller coaster, right? You just have to get to Great Adventure. Great Adventure is a lot of fun. Or you have to get to, I don't know, whatever people is fun, to the concert and a football game and whatever. It's probably only fun for the man. Even that is a tzarchia to me, but I know it's a metzias. I asked Rabbi Willi about this once. Really, Ikra Din, if you're just on your way to Great Adventure, but the trip itself is not fun, then you can call that not pleasure. Then you can call that not pleasure.
I've never done one of these, but assisted with misnadnate.
Right, so they Pashas, the Svina here, is talking about like a rowboat that's misnadnate. A cruise ship is not misnadnate. Meaning, it might be misnadnate if there's like a storm, but not because I step on it. If I step on a cruise ship, it doesn't do anything. I've never been on a cruise ship, but I've been told they're very large. They're like cities. It's not like a rowboat. Yeah, I've been told that they're insane. They have like 8 swimming pools and movie theaters and whatever.
Do they
and
shake?
What?
Do they
no.
shake at all?
No.
I mean, if there's a big enough storm, I'm sure they will. But
not
obviously, they're. What?
Not because of you.
Right, certainly not because of you. I mean, yeah. The only time a cruise ship will shake because of you is if you are running away from a Nevuah. and that's only grown up. Okay. Now, how about cars? Cars are challenging, right? So Moshe says cars don't shake. And A, first of all, usually people sit on bucket seats in cars, and cars don't usually shake. And, you know, even if you're in the back seat of a car and you feel the other guys getting into the back seat, usually cars are just transporting you to where you need to go. So cars are not such an issue as this. The problem with cars is that it's very hard to sit together without touching if you're in the back seat of a car. If you're squished into a car, even, I mean, more than the legal number. If you have 3 people in the back of a car, it's very hard to not touch. So what should you do if you're going in a car? So if you can figure out a way to put someone else in between you, then great. But that's only if you can, you know, have a subtle way of doing it, because we know nowadays people embarrassed there, wondering why, and also only if it's an appropriate person in between you. You know, like if I'm with my wife and with another woman, I don't want to put the woman in between us because it's more inappropriate for me to be sitting next to this other woman. Well, I should touch this other woman instead of my wife. So it depends. If I'm with my wife and my kids, I can put a kid in between us. That's a very normal thing to do. If I'm with my wife and my sister, then if I can get away with it, put my sister in between us. That's appropriate. But if I'm with my wife and a strange woman, then I should sit me, my wife, strange woman. I shouldn't be touching the strange woman. If I'm with my wife and a strange man, it should be strange man, me, my wife. I shouldn't be touching the strange man. My wife shouldn't be touching the strange man. That's really not sneeze. So what should you do if you're next to each other in the car and you can't put someone else in between you, either because you don't want to make a fuss or because of sneeze and you shouldn't put the wrong person in between you? It's not worth having that kind of compromise with Tzinius, then you should put a pocketbook or something in between you to separate you, keep you from touching, and whether you did or you didn't, like if you can put a pocketbook between you, great. And either way, you might, and if not, then you can sit anyway. You should just be very careful not to touch. You know, if you really make an effort, you can even sit in a car when it goes around the twists with someone and not touch the person next to you, if you work hard. So therefore, you should work hard not to touch, and ideally, put a pocketbook in between you.
I definitely agree with the common sense of why it's less appropriate to have you, wife, strange man, or whatever, that scenario where she'd be next to this, or you shouldn't, or you shouldn't. But in terms of the attention of the law, why is that wrong?
Because there are some times when I asked this to Ray Willard once, and this exact question, and he says, because you need common sense.
I know, but
okay.
But isn't there a...
I know, technically, what's the problem? Moshe said there's no problem whatsoever with me being next to a strange woman and touching her when I sit next to her on the subway. But there is a problem being next to my wife, so shouldn't I be next to a strange woman instead of my wife?
So
the answer is, no, sometimes you need common sense.
No, I agree. I'm just trying to pin down what that common sense is. I mean, if it was 2 strange women and you, then we would have no issue with you going to the back of that car.
Correct.
I mean, it's not a degree that here you're squished together. Right?
Correct for Moshe. It's much better to go to the car with 2 strange women, even though you're next to them. Right? So the answer is just, it's just like, it's too weird to say, like, I'd rather be next to a strange woman than next to my wife, halachically. And just doesn't seem appropriate. Okay.
It's basically saying that.
Kach
mikublani. No, but it's saying that this Homer by a Nida is not commonsensical. But it does seem to be commonsensical. It's because we have to commentate and because, like, we're more afraid or something. Like, I mean,
right, but it's still too strange. Okay, Nunu. Kach mikublani.
I might have missed the name of the first. I recently read there was a sefer on Gudah that said that it is not a problem if you put something in between.
Yes.
Do we hold to that? And slash, how
yes, we hold that stops almost non-nude is okay if you put something in between you. He was talking about, you know, obviously you put something big in between you, Miss Stella. What I'm saying is if you're in the back of the car, you can't really, hard to put something big in between you because there's no empty seat. But at least put something small in between you if you can.
So it's even if you could feel each other standing up and sitting down if you have a thing in between.
Yes.
You.
Except for the common sense aspect, is it also like this whole office, like the, what's it called, Mexique, a joke, whatever the phrase is?
Yeah, it could be. I'm not, you know, sorry. It just, you know, it just, it seems problematic to Davka, like, be next to a strange woman instead of your wife. Okay. So that's as far as sitting in a car. Lemaisa, again, sitting in a car, the main issue is not the misnadnade, A, because it's usually not misnadnade, and B, because you're usually transporting yourself someplace important. The main issue in a car is just being very, very close to each other and touching. So, again, you should put a pocketbook, and if you can, and just make an effort not to touch, but you can if you make an effort. But you're chayiv to make that effort. And if you end up touching accidentally, then it's not the end of the world, as long as you were trying not to. Okay, Vav. Lo yishan ima, this is the famous Gemara on Shabbos Daf Yud Gimel. This is the real issue where this story of Elyonim came up. They were asking whether the husband and wife could sleep in the same bed when she's a nida. Maybe even on the hacker, right? In the old days, they usually wear pajamas. So, okay, they would wear pajamas or clothing or whatever. And they said no, and they brought the story, remember, of this guy who would sleep in the same bed as his wife, and even though he never did anything else wrong, Elyonov, he still says, Baruch HaMakom Shehara Go. So says the Mechaber, and that's a clear Meskata. You're not allowed to sleep in the same bed when she's Anida, even if each one is wearing clothing and they're not touching each other. It is still Usher. Okay, that's pretty basic.
Off topic, but why is Misa punishment? Since that theory, the Prima of Dolomhava.
Why is Misa punishment?
Yeah.
That's too off topic. Okay. Adds the Ramav, Afili Yishkol Echad Matzav Bnei Atzmo, even if they each have their own linens, it is still Usser. Vafilim Shokhman Shteini tells me it's Nogizub is Usser. Even if they're in two beds and the beds are touching each other, it is still Usser. Like the minhag in our communities nowadays. I think the minhag in most of our communities nowadays is that the husband and wife, they have two twin beds, like single beds, and they just put them together when she's not a nida, separate them when she is a nida. So even though they're two totally separate beds, when they're together and next to each other, that's us when she's a nida, and they have to push them apart, because even two beds next to each other is still us. How far apart do the beds have to be? The Pisli Chuvas of Kutin Yud Aleph quotes from the Sefer Makor Chayim, Avo Behefresh Kol Shu Bemita Lemita Mutter. First, he discusses all the different ways they could be touching head to foot, foot to foot, head to head. Okay, those are not really said again nowadays. But any kitzer, they shouldn't be touching in any way. But he said if there's a Hefresh Kol Duf, there's even the smallest separation between the two beds, it is Mutter. This is very controversial. The post can write that b'shas adchak you can rely on this hefresh kol duhu. Still doesn't feel like one bed, even if they're a little separated. However, lechatchila, you know, what if someone's staying in a room and there's only enough space to separate? There's a very small room. You can only separate the beds of kol duhu, because then, like, they hit the walls. Then you can sleep away if you're stuck. However, lechatchila, they should be more separate. How separate? Since there's no makoros for this anywhere, everyone just says a different thing. The makobol, the mainstream shot, is that they should be separate enough that the blankets don't touch and you won't accidentally touch during the night. Pashtos, 6 inches is enough for that. I know there are people with larger shirim. Okay, yeah, call them arba, raise up a shubach. But pashtos, they should be separated at least 6 inches. L'chachila, and you know, a little more certainly won't hurt. But b'shas adchak, you can rely on a kol duhu, like it says in the Pesukei Teshuva here, quoting the Sefer, Mekor Chayim. There's a some of the discussion of the poskim, they discuss, I don't know if this is so common what if the two beds share a headboard and they're attached to the same headboard? I don't know, a lot of people don't have headboards nowadays, or maybe some people do. People still have headboards on their beds?
Definitely in America.
In America? Yeah.
Sure.
What?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
But usually it's like one.
Yeah,
one
usually the headboard's not attached to the beds, because how do you separate the two beds if they're attached to the headboard? Right, it seems, if they're attached, then how can you separate them, right? So I'm not quite sure what the metzias is, that you could separate the beds and they're still attached to the headboard. How attached could they be? Someone help me out with metzias?
Yeah, I once encountered this, and we weren't sure what to do. I mean, there was like, the headboard had a frame which the two beds were in. You can only separate the beds like this much. So, they're still connected. They're both on a like frame which is connected. So the headboard's like a big piece.
The headboard's like wider than the beds, and you can separate them.
I don't think people ideally separate them in a normal situation, but like you could separate them a little bit.
Oh, it's not made to be.
Like stuck within a third.
Okay,
it's like
I guess the case could be, what if meant to be beds that aren't separated, and you could like squeeze them apart a little, like for halachic reasons, but it was meant to be together, but they're still attached to the same headboard. Okay, that's very controversial. Right, Willard Musar from the Rubs that he was machmer on this. A lot of folks were makel on this. So Lamai said, if it's not a shas adchak, you should be machmer this. If it's a shas adchak, you can be. If it's a shas adchak, you can be makel.
What's the cool of a shas adchak? That we don't need to separate it?
No, that if you separate them, let's say you separate them a little, the shas adchak, but they're still attached, the same frame, the same headboard, then you can be makel shas adchak. But lechatchila, even if you can separate them 6 inches, you shouldn't get ones with the same headboard.
And would that be true even if you can only push the mat, it's not
much. What if you have sometimes, what if sometimes you have something with two beds attached to a headboard? I saw someplace like this once. I was once a guest someplace like this. There were two beds with a headboard, and it was all attached to each other. You couldn't move them, but you could move the mattresses apart. You could move the you couldn't move the mattress apart too much, so then they'll fall off the edge, but technically you could probably move each of the mattress up to 49% and it won't fall. Okay, with the person, it's a little tricky, but you could probably move them a foot apart if you want, and no one will fall. That's certainly not l'chachila. But the shas hadchak, if you're stuck in something like that, once you move the mattress is what you're sleeping on. You know, that's really separate beds. That's like the, who talks about this? About a bima? I don't remember if it was here. Yeah, here it is. The shach, that mito shall eitz or shall binyan, if they're each in different mitos. What does that mean? It means there's like a platform, and then there are two beds on that platform. If you separate them, it's okay. So here, in this case, b'shas adchak, if you get put in a bed, which is like two beds attached to each other, attached to a headboard, all like screwed into each other. I assume if you have the right tools, you could like maybe separate. I don't even know if you could. But the mattresses are not screwed in, so you can just push the mattresses this far apart, and they'll just stick out over the edge a little. It'll look weird, but you can sleep that way. But shas adchak, you could do that.
Just other mitzvahs aspects. A lot of times bed frames are not attached to anything to do with the bed. They're just a bed frame. They go against the wall. So that's not attached to the cloth, so there'll be no problem at all by separating the beds. Correct? A bed frame is not anything to do with the bed board.
The headboard is not attached at all.
Not attached to the bed.
That's fine.
I'm just leaning against it.
That's fine. That's fine. The headboard is a separate piece that I think everyone can make up.
And if one bed's attached to it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that would also be okay, as long as they're not both. So that would be fine. That's probably what some firm people have, because, again, if you're really going to separate them properly, then it's hard when they're attached. What? Are there headboards in gross?
Like a wooden thing on the wall, which I assume is supposed to be.
Yeah, that's a decorative headboard, but it's not attached to.
It's attached to the wall, right?
It's attached to the wall, right? So that's fine. That's fine. If it's not attached to the beds, it's fine. Just the thing is, if it attaches all the beds, then it's a problem. But shas hamchak, if you're stuck, someone puts you in a room, and what are you supposed to do? And it's like one bed, but two mattresses, and you can push the mattresses like this, then you can remake over shas hamchak.
What about a bunk bed?
It's a big discussion in the poskim. La'aniyas daiti, it seems very clear to me that if you sleep on a bunk bed, you feel like you're sleeping very far away from each other. I think if you ask an average wife, how would you feel if like you were on the top bunk and your husband was on the bottom, or you were on the bottom and your husband was on the top? They would say, I would feel as if I was in Russia and he was in Argentina. Really, even though it's technically attached to each other, it's very hard to call that mita achas. Pasha, that's not mita achas. Some people want to be machmer because if sashalom is not made, if it's not such a strong bunk bed. Although I have, some of my kids sleep in bunk beds, and they're very strong bunk beds. I don't think you feel the nidnut of the guy on top. It's just, that's how well it's made. Anyway, lo maisa, the simple, what? Right, so a camp bunk bed, and even a camp bunk bed, which is misnadne, but it's so much derech of not ohavim, that I mean, I don't know, obviously, why would they sleep on a bunk bed in the first place, right? I mean, tell me if my intuition is wrong. It seems like the most, like, unmarried thing to do, to, like, sleep on a bunk bed.
Oh, we're talking about a situation.
No, but I'm saying that's good, halachically, right? So what's the only time people sleep on a bunk bed? Mamish, they get stuck, they put up someplace where they get put up in a room, and there's like two very nice beds, like attached or a big one, whatever. And there's a bunk bed, so they're stuck. They stay on the bunk bed or whatever. Or maybe they put a place only with a bunk bed, which is a little strange place to put them, but you never know. Anyway, so I think that, you know, if it's misnadne, then if you have another good option, you know, I would take it. But I think really me'ikra din bunk beds are okay, because it's very much a derech of people who are not trying to, like, relate to one another in any way, shape, or form to sleep in a bunk bed. So I think really it's mutter. Obviously, if, you know, it's just as convenient to not sleep in a bunk bed, then beseder. But I really think it's okay. Just, you know, it's clearly not derech of chiva or ohavim or anything. I think it's much more distant than sitting on a couch together.
Why is it if it's like a huge headboard and they're total opposite sides of the room, it is derech chiva?
If they're both attached to a headboard on totally opposite sides of the room, if they're on totally opposite sides of the room, then maybe they'd also say the same thing, but that's not usually how headboards work, right? I mean, no one has that size headboard. What if there's a headboard that was almost 20 feet long? And you're on, that would probably also be mutter. Okay. Zayin. Lo yistakel afilu ba'akeva. You're not allowed to look at her heel. The lo b'mkomas b'chusim shiva. And not at the covered parts of her body. What if you're allowed to look at the revealed parts of her body. So first, let's look at zakeva. Here, it gets a little tricky because this seems to be against the Gemara. Says the Gemara in a Darim Daf Chaf, which teaches a lot of the rules of Tznius and Tashmish, are on that sugya. It says that anyone who looks at the heel of a woman will have banim she'inim uhugan. Blah blah. Not get nachas from his kids. So Rav Yosef says, what is it referred to? Ishto nida. And Reish Lakish says, "Akev the gani mokma tinofesh umechuvin kneged akev." And Reish Lakish says, "It's a euphemism." He says, "Heel doesn't mean heel; it means the genitals, because it's directly above the heel when you stand straight." So, pasha pshat in the Gemara is that it's not usher to look at your wife's heel when she's anita; it's only usher to look at the private parts. Because it doesn't say it's a machlokas. Okay, that's all right. Whether you call that an answer or you call it a pasuk shot,
yeah,
doesn't
matter.
Right? That's not what Beis Yosef thought. Okay? That's not what Beis Yosef thought. Says the Beis Yosef, that's not what Beis Yosef thought. Right? So the Beis Yosef says, what shot? The Gemara only says machmatinofes is aser. And also, the reason why, I'm going to like your pshat in the end. The reason why it's not so pashut is because if it's not talking about Ishtonida, it's talking about a different woman, then it's also looking at anything, even as Mekhtan. Okay, so how do you get from Tinofes to, Tinofes being the mamish, the genital area, to any Mekomos Mechusin? So here there are three pshatim on this. The Beis Yosef says, really, the Gemara only meant to ask her looking at the genital area. However,
oh,
when she's Anita. When she's Anita. It only meant the genital area. However, it's lavdavka, and it's really an example of any covered parts of the body. So, the how do you get from basically from makom atinofes or toref, something left? Says the Gemara, says Reish Lakish, only makom atinofes. How do we get from there to covered parts? So says the Beis Yosef, that lavdavka, and it's just an example of Mekomos Mechusin. Okay, just an example of Mekomos Mechusin, which is a little funny, because it says Makamatinofes. The Gra has a different answer. The Gra says that we should erase this line from the Gemara. He had a different Gersa. Right, says the Gra right here. I am the Torah. Bias, Lahayir Gersoso Shom Amrish Lakish Akeva, etc. I mean, I don't mean the Gra himself decided to erase it. The Gra himself doesn't decide to erase things. As we look in the Rashi, it's clear he didn't have this Gersa. Right? There was no Gersa book at Tanofis. But I think the best shot is the Torah Sashlaman.
And what is the Gersa instead?
Just leave out that line. It just says Ishtonida. You can't look at the heel of Ishtonida. And the heel is an example of Mekomos Mechusim in that country.
Heels are covered, okay.
Exactly. Which works much better for the Mechaber, because what did the Mechaber say? You can't look at her heel or Mekomos Mechusim. He didn't say you can't look at her private parts or Mekomos Mechusim, which is what he should have said according to Beis Yosef. I mean, he's the Beis Yosef, saying the lashon that he's quoting here from, okay, I think he's quoting the lashon of the Rashba, right? Erase this line from the Gemara, and the real Isser is the Akev, which is an example of Mekomos Mechusim. And that's very meduyik in the lashon of the Rashba, which is quoted in the Mechaber here. Don't look at her heel or Mekomos Mechusim. The Beis Yosef is not so meduyik, because she said don't look at her private part to Mekomos Mechusim. Okay. However, I really like the pshat of the Torah Sashlam here. Says the Torah Sashlamim here, which is what Chesky said. He says no. He says Rav Yosef and Reish Lakish are two different pshatim in the Braisa. He says there are two different shitos, meaning two different, and we pass like both of them. Rav Yosef says it's an akev, and it's be'ishtomida, and that's an example of mekomos mechusim. And Reish Lakish, Rav Yosef said ishtomida, right? I think it was Rav Yosef, be'ishtomida. And Reish Lakish says Makom Tinofes, right? So the Reish Lakish says, you're not going to look at the Makom Tinofes of Ishtonida, and that's an example of Mekomos Mechusim. The Gruss says, erase Reish Lakish, the wrong gear says, just Rav Yosef, you're not looking at the heel of Ishtonida, it's an example of Mekomos Mechusim. So there's only, no, there are two different shitas. Rav Yosef says, you're not going to look at the heel of Ishtonida, which is Mekomos Mechusim. Reish Lakish says, it means Makom HaTinofes, and then who is it talking about? Your Ishtonada, obviously, it's not talking about a strange woman. What's the Hadmina? Uve ishto tehora, and then it's haka chiddush. An ishto tehora, you're allowed to look at mekomos mechusim. You might have thought you're allowed to look at anything, and then it's very relevant. That's what the Gemara talks about, right? The stock of oso makom. So it's gemashlan. You're allowed to look at anything except for one, except for oso makom the makom atinofes. So I just think it's very meduyik because then it fits into the rest of the Gemara Nedarim, which says, you know, why do people have bun and suman? Because they're stock of oso makom. Okay, Lemaisa, it doesn't make a difference. This is not enough being Lemaisa. Either way, we paskin in Orchayim that you're not allowed to look at the Oso Makom of Ishtot Omra, because that comes up later in the Gemara Nedarim anyway. And either way, they all end up agreeing that you're not allowed to look at Makomos Mechusim of Ishtot Nida. And that's not the Lemaisa. You're not allowed to look at Makomos Mechusim, or you are allowed to look at Makomos Gluyim, even though you're Nana, even though for a strange woman on the street. You know, now what am I looking? I don't mean see, we don't mean seeing, we mean looking. You're allowed to walk on the street even if you see people who aren't sandua, so you just try to avoid seeing women who aren't sandua or women who aren't sandua, right? But if you see women on the street, that's not usher. However, to be mistakel, to stare at women on the street is usher even if they're sandua, even the Mekomos Gluyim, right? The Gemara says, even the, you look in etzba ketana of a woman, right? If you look at women in the street and you're nana from their beauty, then that's usser. But if your wife's a nida, even though she's a rias to you, but because it's less, because you have pasta salo, and also shalot zgana, maybe also shalot zgana albala, therefore, when your wife's a nida, you're allowed to look at them as gluyim, even to mamish stare at them to enjoy, to get hana from her beauty. But you're not allowed to look at mekomos mechusim. Okay, how do you know what's called mekomos mechusim? And what's called mekomos gluyim is a big machlokas. We paskin like Rav Moshe Feinstein. In, yeah?
Just to clarify, when it's mekomos gluyim versus mechusim, it's that area in the body or that area in the body, what is uncovered?
No, no, I mean that area in the body. Mekomos gluyim means like hands and face.
You're right. Sorry, I'm going the way around. See, like, when, like, let's say it was her heel, for example, which is generally covered in their place. So then if you were to stare at it while
only while it's uncovered. Sorry. You're allowed to look at mekomos mechusim when they're mechusim.
Right.
You're only not allowed to look at them when they're gluyim. Right, so like you're allowed to look at her in her clothing, even though under her clothing is the mekomos mechusim.
Right.
You're allowed to look at the middle of her body. You're just not allowed to look at it if she's not properly dressed. What does it mean properly dressed? Does that mean that which means that ultimately when the wife's a nida, she can't be machshel her husband and look at the mekomos mechusim. So when the wife's a nida, she has to dress properly around her husband. What does it mean dress properly around her husband? Like a Beis Yaakov girl in the shuk. So this is a big machlokes. There are those who say, yeah, she has to dress like a Beis Yaakov girl in the shuk in front of her husband, you know, with the long sleeves and the long skirt and the whole shebang. However, we pass like Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein says in the Iris Moshe Chelik Beis Simen Ayin Hei, Chelik 2, 775. Rav Moshe writes, it doesn't mean mekomos mechusim and gluyim in the shuk. It means in a family setting, in the home setting. After all, we know in many of our communities, women have different standards of dress when they go out into the shuk and when they're home with their family. I don't mean provocative dress in the privacy of their bedroom. I just mean in a family setting. When the wife's home with her husband and kids, she will not be as machmed on the tznias of her dress as when she's out in the street. Obviously, if she's home with her relative, she's not going to dress provocatively. That would be ridiculous. But she's, you know, I mean, everyone has their own minhag, but there might be some places where she'll dress properly in the street. But if she's home with just her family, she might wear shorts, she might wear a t-shirt, she might wear whatever it is she wears. Because that's considered regular, comfortable, casual dress, which is not provocative in her house. So Rav Moshe says, however she dresses in her house in a family setting, obviously that's not a romantic setting. However she dresses in a family setting in her house, that's how she's allowed to dress during Nida. And if she wears short sleeves in the house, even though she wears long, you know, she wears long sleeves in the shuk, if she wears a t-shirt around the house, then she can wear a t-shirt when she's in Nida, and even though the husband sees her arms, that's okay, because that's considered mekomos gluyim in this context. Okay, that's Rav Moshe's chiddush, that we go by how she dresses casually in the house, not by how she dresses in the shuk, and we follow that. And therefore, the husband's allowed to look at her, even if she's dressed casually, as long as she's dressed appropriate enough to be in front of family members in a household setting. Right? If she wouldn't be embarrassed to be dressed that way in front of her son, then her husband could see her that way when she's a nida, because that's considered mekomos gluyim, even though she would dress, get more dressed to go outside.
When you said son, you may have answered this question, but there could be a woman who feels more comfortable, let's say, wearing pajamas, but not necessarily for a guest over, even though it's inside of her house, or even like relatives or over inside of her house, but like not necessarily provocative, but just like certain types of clothing she might be more comfortable, more exposed than others. I mean, like a gradation between like pajamas versus in the house versus outside.
Yeah, like if she would walk around the house in pajamas in front of her kids, even though the pajamas aren't like full tznius, then her husband can look at her that way when she's a nita. But obviously, she's not going to walk around in her underwear in her house. You know, that's obviously inappropriate. But, like, she would just dress casually. Like, I mean, would only walk around a long skirt all over the house. There are many women who would walk around in pajamas in their house and would walk around in t-shirts in their house. And they would consider that just to be casual dress. I don't mean when guests are over. Or just the family. So then, that's okay when she's a nida. How about, does she have to cover her hair or not? That is a big machlokes. That is exceedingly That is exceedingly controversial as well. Many people are very machmer on this. Many people are very machmer on this. However, Moshe Feinstein says, and that's his main point, that a lot of women in his circles and our circles, they cover the hair when they go out in the street, but they don't cover the hair at home all the time. And therefore, it's okay to not cover here when she's Anita, and for her husband to see her here when she's Anita. That's even though it's a place she would cover in the street, since it's a place she reveals she doesn't cover in a casual home setting, that's okay. So halacha lemaisa, she can walk around however she's comfortable with in a household setting. She can walk around in t-shirts and with her hair uncovered, and her husband can look at her that way when she's Anita. And Rav Moshe says that's okay because that's considered makomos guluyim in a household setting. Not everyone agrees, but we follow Rav Moshe.
Is it the same similar in the Rav Moshe?
Yes, yes. I think that was his original question, was the hair. What about the Pesach Chuvos of Katan Zion? What about Kolisha? What about if she sings when she's Anita? Is that a problem or not? So the Pesach Chuvos says, Tzorich Ion, if she could or not. And then he wants to lean towards saying that it's Usser, and he has a raya that it's Usser, although it's not such a great raya. And then in the end he says Tzorich Ion. So he has Tzorich Ion leans towards Isser. Rav Moshe in that same simon says Tzorich Ion and leans towards Isser. And they don't have a clear hachra. He says maybe Kolisha is more chamer because after all singing is very alluring. So there are many people who are Machmer and Kolisha, because both the Pesach Tshuva and the Igros Moshe say Tzorich Ion and lean to be Machmer. Rav Avadya Yosef is making a legamri on this. And he says, no, that's just like uncovering your hair and wearing a t-shirt. That's not mamish-like, provocative behavior. It's just not what you would do in the street, in front of strangers. But it's like normal household level of tznius. And there are different hung about this. Ray Willig is makel on this and says that, you know, since no one paskin for sure that it's usser, and there are posts who say for sure it's mutter, then we can be makel. So halach l'maisa, there are different hung on this. Even Rav Moshe was makel by everything else, was sarach iyun about kol isha. But we can follow Ray Willig and be makel, and Rav Avadya, be makel and kol isha. And assume that, no, that's the equivalent of kolos guluyim, because it's just something that's, you know, not provocative, and people will be comfortable in a family setting.
Does it help you combine, like, other factors, like zmiros, or like whatever, you know, classic, kolisha, svaros?
It couldn't hurt. You know, although, whatever, zmiros is always a double-edged sword, because zmiros is a factor of the hakel, because it's really age, but it's all, and they're right as the Sri Deish. It's also, I mean, it didn't bother Sri Deish, but it's a factor of the Hakel because different Kedusha don't have the same type up, but it's also a factor of the Hachmer because, according to many Gaonim and Rishonim, there's only a sort of Kolisha when you're saying verbs from Kedusha. So if the husband's also singing Zmiros, I mean, if the wife's singing Zmiros, it's a factor of the Hakel. The husband's singing Zmiros at the same time, it's a factor of the Hachmer. So how can he sing Zmiros? So anyway, the Batla Maisa, you can be Mekel. You can be machmer also if you want. Ches. You're allowed to be machmer also. Ches. Roy lashet yachla begadon me nidusa kadesh yushneim zokrim tamishi nida. It's fitting for her to have special clothing when she's Anita, so they both remember that she's Anita. Okay. Lamaisa, this is not the mainstream minhag nowadays. I don't know if some people do it, but from, you know, the communities that I've seen and people I've talked to, it seems that this is not the mainstream minhag nowadays. Tes bekoshi tirul eskashi means you sell kedushas galal baila. The bekoshi, meaning Chazal, reluctantly allowed her to. Simple shot of kisha can mean different things, but the simple shot is means makeup. Bekoshi, they let her use put on makeup when she's Anita, because makeup is alluring, is attractive, but they didn't want her to be niskan al baila, right? They didn't want her to look ugly and then ruin the relationship with her husband. It's important the husband should think his wife's pretty. And therefore, they were mocked at her. Is there an afkamina of test that Bekoshi, Maisa Hitirula? She can do whatever she wants. Is there an afkamina of Bekoshi Hitirula? So the afkamina is that, you know, she shouldn't overdo it when she's Anita. know, she should, she can look nice for her husband, even when she's in Nida, so that you don't want him to start having a bad impression of her physically. But she should be reasonable about it. Sifyut, kol malach she'isos l'vayla nida osalo chutz mimzigas akos, etc. Right, and that's three se'ifim worth. The Gemara says that the wife's allowed to do all the malachos for her husband, even when she's a nida, except for three, because these three malachos have special chiba. What are the three malachos with special chiba? They are mezigas hakos, hatzas amita, and archatzas panav yadav raglav. Apparently in the old days, and even nowadays, these are a special chiba, that she pours a cup of wine for him, and that she makes his bed. Making the bed, of course, is not referring to what we call making a bed. What we call making a bed is not such a big chiba. It's like, now I'm not sleeping, I want it to look nice, like for not sleeping in it. They meant making the bed for sleeping in, which is a big chiba, because again, it has connotations of tashmish if you're preparing a bed for sleeping. And washing his hands and face and feet, which is a special chiba. So those three things are usher. We'll see later on in Sifu Gimel that these three malachos, even though usually there were malachos the wife did for the husband in the old days, because that was the nature of the social reality in those days, but halachically, they are bidirectional. It's just as usher for the husband to do for the wife as it is for the wife to do for the husband. Just in the old days, the wife always did it for the husband, the husband didn't do it for the wife, so that's what Chazal mentioned. But that just happens to be the common case in the old days, but halachically, it's equally usher in both directions. Okay, what are the details of these? Mezigas HaKos is the most complex in terms of the details. It says, Chutz Mezigas HaKos, Shasur Limzog HaKos Bifanav Anthroma Ulanicho Lefanav Al Shulchan. Elim came, this is Ksubas Daf Samach Aleph, right? It's also do these three things, but they say the base who did, I forgot whose the base who it was, Rav Chisda, right? Would give it in with her left hand. And then the other Amoro's wife would like put it in a strange place instead of in front of them. So as he says, Elam Kintasa Shum Hecker, unless she does a hecker. What's a hecker? Two examples of a hecker. Either Shetani Khanwal Shokum Yat Smol, she does it with her left hand, obviously if she's righty. That's a hecker. Or she puts it on a pillow or mattress or something other than the table, even with her right hand. The Achronim assume that even if she puts it on the table, but if she doesn't put it in his setting on the table, she puts it far away on the table, then he has to reach and transfer it to his part of the table. That's also considered a shinoi, because that's a very abnormal way of doing things. So like, you know, if here's my place on the table, she puts it over there. The serving plates go, then I have to take it, that would also be considered a shinoi. Now, what are the parameters of this iser? There are two questions here. One is, what is meziga sakos? What does meziga mean? So, the, I apologize. I wanted to point out one other thing. We'll come back to this. I just wanted to point out this very important taz. You see this taz in Sukkot and Zion? Not the first line, but the rest of this taz. This is a crucial taz for like all of like modern day science and halacha shailos. Like the world really revolves around whether this taz is correct or not. Says the taz, b'mtzias. The modern day scientists say that what the taz is worried about doesn't actually happen b'mtzias, but that's not important at all. We're interested in the principles. What does the taz say? That a woman, he says, the minhag is that a nida will sleep on her husband's sheet, but a married woman won't sleep on another man's sheet. Why? Because the husband or the other man might have had mikri lila and left shechva zera on the sheet, and when she sleeps on it, it'll go into her body and make her pregnant. Now, let's just, for the sake of intellectual honesty, modern-day scientists say that a woman cannot get pregnant by sleeping on sheets with someone's shechva zera. It's not going to go all the way into her body. It doesn't work that way. Okay, but that's not so important because we have other ways of women getting pregnant from zera without tashmish nowadays, such as fertility treatments, you know, artificial insemination, etc. So basically, this is the taz. He was thinking of something which Mencius doesn't work, but this is the taz of artificial insemination. What's the din of artificial insemination? So says the taz. He says that there's no problem of nidos Because even if she gets pregnant when she's a Nida, since she didn't do an Isra, there's no pgam in the child. Meaning, there's nothing bad about a child who's conceived when the wife's a Nida if it wasn't an Avera. So, big deal. Nothing bad happens to a child conceived during Nida. What about the... what about someone else? He says, even if she has impregnated by someone else, then the child's kosher. This is the big chiddush of the Taz here. Even though Rav Schechter has a siman about this, I think, someplace where he points out, he can die from Tosin, Yvonne's not being Zion, not like this Taz. But says the Taz, if there is no Avera, there's no Mamzerus. So even if she sleeps on a strange man's sheet and gets pregnant from that strange man's semen, the kid won't be a Mamzer because there's no Avera. Then he brings a riot from the Tzira, who the Medrash says was conceived by his father and his father and her mother and his mother were Arias, were father and daughter, were close relatives, but they were conceived through artificial insemination, and therefore he was not a Mamzer. Okay, how that happened is a very strange story. So the kid's not a Mamzer, so what's the problem if she sleeps on a strange man's sheet and has his kid, if the kid's not a Mamzer? The problem is Shemayisa Achasachoso, that maybe the kid will grow up and not know who his father is. And then he'll grow up and he'll meet the nice girl next door and he'll say, I'll marry her, and he won't realize it's really his paternal half-sister, and he'll do a rias. Okay, we see a lot of important things from this Rabbeinu Peretz, and that goes on the smack, which is really the only Rishon who explicitly related to artificial insemination. So only one Rishon who explicitly related to the halachas of artificial insemination. And we learned from here two things. A, there's no mamzerus to artificial insemination. B, there is yichus to artificial insemination. Because he says, we're afraid the kid might grow up and marry a sibling, which means he's related to his father. So we see that if you have a baby through artificial insemination, there's no chash mamzerus, but it's still considered your baby. There's still a relationship. That is of crucial importance to modern day halacha in two ways. A, that proves that if a husband artificially inseminates his wife through fertility procedures or IVF or IUI or whatever it may be, it's still considered his kid. He doesn't have to worry that, well, since I didn't have conceived this baby through bio with my wife, only through artificial insemination, maybe it's not really my kid. No, it's still his kid. He doesn't lose his yichus if the husband uses artificial reproductive technology. That's the Beis Shmuel says this in the beginning of Ibn Ezer. Chalkin Dachoki says, I wonder if you're Mekayim Pur Revuk through artificial insemination. And the Beis Shmuel says, we can prove from here you're Mekayim Pur Revuk because it's still considered your kid. If it's your kid, it's Pur Revuk. So A, that's the mainstream psak. I'm not saying everyone agrees. The mainstream psak is A, if the husband artificially impregnates his wife, he has yichus, and it's his kid for all purposes, and Mekayim Pur Revuk, and it's just as good a family as anyone else's. B, that if another man artificially impregnates the wife, then there's no mamzerus. Then there's no mamzerus. And therefore, said Rav Moshe, he said two heterim, one of which is, neither of which is agreed upon by everyone, but both of which are mainstream. One heter is a very mild heter, which didn't offend most people, only the Sappers, which is that the husband can and wife can have kids through artificial technology, and as long as it's the husband's sperm that impregnates the wife somehow, then it's his kid and it's a normal family and they've regularly yichus and peruvu. Okay, the Sappers didn't like that, but most people had no problem. The second psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein based on this is, if the husband doesn't have sperm, which is much less common now, nowadays that's much less nevi'el ma'isa, because with modern technology they can find sperm in a lot of men, you know, even if they seem to not have sperm. They can mamish get sperm out of them, so it's less nogea. But let's say you have a man who mamish, there's something so wrong with him, he can't produce sperm at all. He mamish can't have kids. There's no way. Again, 99% of the time, even if his regular shechva zera is not fertile, we can figure out a way to get a sperm cell out of him. But let's say mamish, has such a big mum that he has no sperm. Says Rav Moshe, you can use goyish donor sperm and impregnate the wife, and it's nochshash mamzerus. I mean, going, oh, anyway, nochshash mamzerus, no avera, nochshash mamzerus, because we see from here the only problem was she yisa achsachoso. And over here, there's no problem yisa achsachoso because it's not related to the goyish relatives. And that was Rav Moshe's famous heter that a lot of people disagreed with him about. And Rav Moshe says, even if you use Jewish sperm to artificially inseminate someone, there's nochshash mamzerus. just, you have to tell the kid who his brothers and sisters are, so he won't marry them when he grows up. But, you know, I don't know, let's say you had some guy who had no kids at all, and all he had was like one bit of sperm, and he donated it. You could put that into a married woman, and she could have his kid, and as long as there were no other relatives, and that would be kosher lemahadrin. There would be no mamzerus. A lot of people argue with Moshe about this, but most poskim agreed with him. So that's why this is a crucially important for rabbinic parents.
Also, is there, since it's halachically infertile, can you lechatchila do it during nida?
I mean, can you do? So the other thing we learned from this rabbinic parents is that you can do artificial insemination when the wife's in nida. This is very nugia lemaisa because often, like if when they do artificial insemination, not IVF. IVF means they do surgery on the woman, take out an egg. They take sperm from the man, they combine them in a test tube baby, and then after it starts growing as an embryo, they put it into the woman's uterus. That's, you know, strong stuff. The more baby steps of fertility medicine is called artificial insemination. You just take zera from a man, and you process a little to make it a little better, and you put a tube into the woman's uterus, and you squeeze the zera in there. That's a much easier procedure. No surgery necessary. So can you do that when she's a nida? This comes up all the time because ma'isim b'chol yom, you have to do this when she's ovulating. The time when she's ovulating means she's producing an egg. She produces an egg once a month. Sperm can only make her pregnant at the day, 2 days, whatever, that she produces the egg. So what if she happens to be a nida then? What do you do? So based on this remaining parents, we say mainstream halacha, even though there are machmir, but that's not mainstream, mainstream halacha is that you're allowed to do artificial insemination even when she's a nida, and there's no pgam lemahadrin in the baby, because that's what remaining parents said. L'chadchila heter gomer. So therefore, the mainstream halacha is that it's heter gomer to do artificial insemination when she's a nida. There are a minority shita that's machmir about it, but that is not mainstream. There are some people who want to say that there's some people who want to say that, just the extra machmir, if the woman needs artificial insemination when she's a nida, which is very common, she should, like, go to the mikvah, because it's been 7 days, and be d'oraisa tahora, do the artificial insemination, and then later she'll go to the mikvah in the regular time to be d'rabbanan tahora and sleep with her husband. There are those who want to do that. However, the mainstream poskim do not like that idea because experience has shown that what's going to happen in the end is once she goes to the mikvah, is tahora d'oraisa, then they're going to have a taiva and they're going to sleep together and violate the iser d'rabbanan of chomer d'rabzeira, because once a woman goes to the mikvah, it's very hard to feel like a nida. And therefore, the poskim say that even though it might sound like yishvi machmer, in case your ben parents is wrong, you don't want to have a pgam in the ben nida. Let her get rid of her need to do rice at least now. But that leads to a michshal, and therefore the proper hurrah for the rabbim is that if the artificial insemination when she's a nida, just follow her baby parents and say it's motil kafila. And she'll go to the mikvah 3 days later, and that's no problem to conceive while she's a nida.
So this is all assuming, though, that just to clarify, the hagos smach, or the baby parents, is that it's the whole pagan stems from the parents, and not like it didn't her being a nida.
Yes. Exactly. That's what parents' assumption. The problem with Benida is not that she has the Tumas Nida on her and that affects the plot, but that the Avera affects the plot. That's why some people disagree.
I'm saying there's no Rishonim.
You mean Rishonim in philosophy, not Rishonim in halachic context. That's a good question. You probably could find. Meaning, I have a feeling I could look someplace in the Ramban and find a disagreement with that. I know, whenever you say Rishonim, we're in a philosophical context, you mean Ramban.
What's wrong with her being a nida?
Because the Gemara says that a ben nida is pugum.
I understand. I'm
because if she has a certain like koach atuma in her when she's a nida, maybe that could go into the vlad and make a problem. Okay? And Rabbeinu Peretz thinks not.
Yeah, I'll show you the
Rabbeinu.
Where is this
Rabbeinu Peretz? In the Taz, Sivkat Zayin. Matzati behagos smak yoshem shem Rabbeinu Peretz. It's also found in our smocks, like on the shelf. Yeah, so this Taz, it's a total tangent here. But it's really important, because like all of reproductive halacha starts in the Rabbeinu Peretz. Then you make it more complicated, but every article about anything about reproductive technology and halacha in the modern world all starts with this Rabbeinu Peretz, and then moves on. So, this is the starting point. So that's why it's very important in science to survey the parents. Okay, we'll have to come back to the rest of Mezigas HaKos, Amir Tz Hashem, next time. So next time we'll finish Siman Kuf Tzadi Hei. and be able to start Simen Kof Tzadik Vav with Yirtzeh Hashem. Yeah. It's one of these things that, like, we all know in modern science that you don't get pregnant from someone's sheets, but, like, it's a good thing that Rabbeinu Peretz discussed it, because, you know, it's, Rav Schechter likes to say this. He used to say, everything in the Gemara, even if it sounds like it can never happen, is always relevant to something that will happen someday in Halacha. You just have to wait for it to become relevant. This is the classic.